They have in place basically a system that it is that is designed much as this House Bill 280 is, so that up front a determination is made as to need, as to financing, as to the schedules for the construction and completion and the need for that particular energy resource. With that little bit of background, let me ask you if you would to turn with me to page 2. We pass a lot of legislation through this House, and many times we do not take time to look at the actual definitions. Let me tell you that the definitions in House Bill 280 are extremely important, because these terms are used throughout the bill, and they're not terms that you and I use every day. Some of them are not. And as a result of that, you need to look with me closely at the definition so that as we go through the bill, when you see these terms, you will know to what they refer. Capacity resource means an electric plant, a long-term power purchase, or a demand-side capacity option. As we work our way through the bill, you will find that the bill basically provides for two things. Firstly, it provides that on an annual basis, the utility will file an integrated resource plan. And we'll define that integrated resource plan in just a minute. Secondly, you will find that the bill provides for a mechanism called certification, certificate of need, certificate of public convenience, provides for a method by which the electric utility company must go to the commission prior to putting into place a capacity resource. Again, an electric plant, a long-term purchase, an off-system purchase, for example, or a demand-side capacity option. Some of those terms that are used in that definition, by the way, are also defined in Section 1 of the bill. Commission obviously refers to the Georgia Public Service Commission. Construction. How do you determine at what point a certificate is needed? Look with me at the definition of construction. Clearing of land, excavation, or other substantial activity leading to the operation of an electric plant, other than planning, land surveying, land acquisition, exploration, design work, licensing, regulatory activity involved in obtaining construction and environmental permits. That definition is important because I anticipate that there will be some discussion about that today from some individuals who believe that before the power company even begins to plan, they must go to the commission and get a certificate. Obviously, I am not in favor of any amendments that may be offered with regard to that, but I want you to be aware of it because it's extremely important that you look at that language and understand that if that section is amended, then before the company can even plan to go to the commission, can even plan the construction, they must go to the commission, file an application, and get a certificate. In doing the planning, in doing the land surveying, land acquisition, exploration, design work, licensing, the shareholders are at risk because if a certificate is not granted by the commission, then there is no recovery for those expenditures by the utility. Number 4 defines demand side capacity option. There will be an amendment offered by the gentleman from the 99th and from me that will add a few words on line 24. a program, demand-side capacity option, meaning a program proposed by a utility or the commission. And we will offer to you the wording or the commission so that either the utility or the commission can propose a program for the reduction of future electricity requirements that the utility's retail customers would otherwise impose. And then you'll see, including but not limited to, several items that you and I associate with demand-side options. It's not limited to these. These are here purely by way of suggestion. Paragraph 5 defines an electric plant. Basically, it's the facility and the ancillary facilities, including the real estate, for the construction of that plant. Long-term power purchase, which again is one of the capacity options, is defined as the purchase of electric capacity and energy for a period exceeding 1 year. Number 7, the plan that is referred to is what I mentioned as being one of the primary thrusts of the bill. It's the integrated resource plan. Supply side capacity option. Electric plant, long-term power purchase, or any other source of additional energy. Utility is defined here as an electric supplier whose rates are fixed by the commission. That definition is extremely important because that definition by law excludes the electric membership corporations, Oglethorpe Power, and the municipal electric associations. Beginning on line 2, we begin to formulate the integrated resources plan and require that beginning January 31st, 1992, and each year thereafter, the utility that is covered under subsection 3A, which is Georgia Power and Savannah Power, must file with the commission an integrated resource plan. That plan must contain, in paragraph B, the utility's electric demand and energy forecast for at least a 20-year period. In C, it must also contain the utility's program for meeting the requirements shown in that forecast in an economical and a reliable manner. The plan is to contain the utility's analysis of all capacity resource options, including both demand side and supply side. It further is to set forth the utility's assumptions and conclusions with respect to each of those options and the future cost associated therewith. What must the commission do with that plan? In paragraph D, they are allowed the discretion to set by rule and regulation whatever workshops, meetings they may want to have with regard to that plan. Let me stop here for just a minute and say that why that is so important. Presently, the power company may be generating that information. They may be generating forecasting information for 20 years down the road. But it is not always being made available to the commission and then under open records to the public so that you and I and our constituents and even the individuals in the hall that oftentimes intervene in rate cases will have access to historical data prepared by the utility and submitted to the commission, historical data to show what their projections are for future needs in this state and how we will meet those needs with an affordable and an available source of energy. Beginning with paragraph 3, section 3 on line 7 of page 4, we begin the certification process, the second phase, if you will, of House Bill 280, so that the effective date being January 31, 1992, that after that date, no utility will commence construction of an electric plant, sell an existing plant, or any portion of it that happens to presently be in the rate base, enter into any long-term purchase, or enter into any demand-side options without first obtaining from the Commission a certificate. In addition to that, the utility cannot, in paragraph B, permanently increase or decrease the capacity, productive capacity, of any of its capacity resources without first obtaining from the Commission a certificate. There is a provision there, of course, that where federal rules and regulations become involved, that we have no control over, the Commission has no control over, and the utility has no control over, then obviously those are excluded. The 15% is extremely important because it applies to both increasing capacity as well as decreasing capacity. Before doing either one, they must come to the Commission and get a certificate. And you'll notice that the word permanently is in place. You will have temporary shutdowns from time to time because of either repair and maintenance, or there may be a problem with a particular system. These are permanent increases or decreases in productive capacity. Paragraph 4 sets forth the provision for the Commission entering a certificate or granting a certificate upon a finding that there is or there will be a need for some proposed capacity resource. And again, construction, power purchase, or demand side, that there's a need for it at the time that it becomes available or will become available in order to supply an affordable, economical, and reliable supply of electric power and energy. Paragraph B, and I've gone to the top of page 5. The utility's application for a certificate is to be accompanied by that integrated resource plan that is most current. You have an annual filing. It could be that some 8 or 9 months after the January deadline for filing an integrated resource plan, the Commission files an application for a certificate. If they do so, and they have more current information in their resource plan that has not yet been filed with the Commission, they ought to have to supply it and make it available. Paragraph C simply states that the application for a certificate must contain certain things: a cost-benefit analysis covering the useful life of the capacity resource that is considered in developing that integrated resource plan, the estimated cost of that resource must, of course, be presented to the Commission at the time the application is made. That certificate, or that application for a certificate, is obviously filed with the Commission. And now, as you will recall, when a utility goes to the Commission, the Commission must take action, most of the time it's on rate request, must take action in not less than 30 nor in more than 180 days with regard to that filing, that current filing with the Commission. That language is tracked in this law with the exception that because this is a new animal for the Commission, on that first filing, they will need additional time to gear up for determining that application or ruling on that application, and they ought to have that time. So you'll notice that for the first application, they may take up to 300 days, and thereafter it drops back to the 180 days for future filings. This requires that after the filing, the commission must either grant the certificate or deny it. And if they deny it and they have found that a need exists, they authorize a specific alternative means for supplying the requirements found by the commission to exist. Otherwise, the utility would not continue to have the obligation to serve. Each certificate must describe that capacity resource, the construction scheduled, and the approved cost. If you will, turn with me now to page 6, beginning on line 3. As the law is now, the conclusion of paragraph B, which is at the top of page 6, says that if the commission fails to act, the certificate is granted by operation of law. That is the existing law now with regard to other filings at the commission. There is an application fee to be paid by the utility. As all of you are aware, that fee, just as other fees that are generated by other agencies of state government, are paid into the general treasury. And this fee is to be paid into the general treasury as well. The fee amount is set by the commission in an amount in their discretion reasonably needed to defray the cost. The question is going to be raised, and I anticipate it today, that the question will be, how do you guarantee that the commission gets the funding that's needed in order to deal with the application? There's a fee there, but that money is paid into the general treasury. Well, that is mine and your obligation with regard to the Public Service Commission, just as it is to every other state agency that comes to us and requests funds for their fiscal year. It is our responsibility as members of this General Assembly to make certain that through the appropriations process, not only the Public Service Commission, but the other agencies as well get the funding that's needed. Paragraph 6 on page 6, beginning on line 14. Assuming that a certificate has been granted, the commission may re-examine to determine whether or not the forecasts that were used in granting the certificate have in fact changed, to determine whether or not that certificate that was granted needs to be modified, it might modify the construction, the long-term power purchase, or the expenditure for any certificated capacity resource. What happens if the commission determines that there is no longer a need for that additional capacity? Then they may modify or they may revoke the certificate. And if they do, the utility may in fact cancel their plans. What happens in the event the utility cancels? It may recover through rates, as it does now, over a reasonable period of time, which is the way it's done now. The rates, as you know, are based over a period of time. In the absence of any fraud, concealment, failure to disclose a material fact, imprudence, which we're going to talk about some more in a minute, imprudence, or criminal misconduct, the amount of its investment in the capacity resource, along with the carrying cost. If it's done over a number of years, obviously the company incurs costs in carrying that money forward for the return. Not a profit. Cost along with the cost of carrying the funds. And again, the very last few words of that paragraph found at the top of page 7 are very important. To the extent they recover, not only in the absence of those things I mentioned a minute ago, but only to the extent that the expenditures have been made as verified and pursuant to the certificate that's granted by the commission. Paragraph 7, beginning on line 3, deals with the recovery in the case of construction of facilities. If the commission has not modified or revoked the certificate, then at the completion of construction, when the facility is ready to be placed into service, the commission will add into the rate base 100% of the cost that they approved and certificated up front. Again, to the extent that you show the absence of fraud, concealment, failure to disclose material fact, imprudence, or criminal misconduct. In addition to that safeguard, the only way that costs in excess of 100% could ever be recovered through rates by the commission, they must show that those expenditures were both reasonable and prudent. Paragraph 6. We're all familiar with what has happened during construction projects with regard to cost, with regard to federal rule and regulation intervention, with regard to environmental concerns, a number of factors. It is extremely important, as is found in 7B, beginning on line 14, that number one, the commission on its own motion may conduct, or the utility may request that the commission conduct, an ongoing review of that construction as it proceeds. In addition to that, within a window of 1 to 3 years, unless the commission determines that 1 year is too long of an interval, and then the commission may request at lesser intervals, the company must file a progress report, any revisions in cost estimates, construction schedule, or project configuration. As a safeguard, within 180 days of that filing, the commission shall verify and approve or disapprove the expenditures made pursuant to the certificate. Going to the top of page 8. If the commission verifies expenditures that have been made pursuant to the resource that's certificated, that verification forecloses the exclusion of those costs from the utility's rate base, again, absent fraud, concealment, failure to disclose, imprudence, or criminal misconduct. In the event that the commission in paragraph D disapproves of all or of some part of a proposed revision, and as a result of that, the utility cancels its construction, the utility again recovers over a reasonable period of time, absent the fraud, misconduct, and imprudence, the amount of its actual investment, not avoided cost, actual investment in the partially completed portion of the facility, along with the cost of carrying that money over that reasonable time frame, again to the extent that the expenditures have been made pursuant to the certificate. 8 and 9 on page 8 deal with long-term power purchases and demand-side options. In 8, in the event that the company enters into a long-term power purchase, they may recover in rates, the approved or actual cost, whichever is less, of the purchase of that power, together with some rate of return, which is what they earn on now, a rate of return, that is determined by the commission. And on line 23, the gentleman from the 99th and I will offer an amendment to delete that last sentence and to substitute in its place the following. The commission shall consider lost revenues, if any, changed risks, and an equitable sharing of benefits between the utility and its retail customers, so that the consumers have an opportunity to benefit from those long-term power purchases that are certificated by the commission. Paragraph 9 deals with recovery for demand-side options and providing an incentive to the commission, to the utility, to make certain that we look at conservation, that we explore all conservation alternatives, and that the utility be encouraged to implement these conservation measures. And to the extent that they do so, to the extent that they get a certificate for a demand-side conservation option, they be allowed to recover their approved or actual cost of that capacity option, that demand-side capacity option, together with an additional sum as determined by the commission to encourage the development of those resources. It is extremely important that you note here as well that the commission be allowed to consider lost revenues, if any, by implementing demand-side options, and changed risks to the company, as well as an equitable sharing. Paragraph 10, as you know, had generated some discussion about substantial evidence. That has been deleted. For the first time in law, we have an opportunity to say to the commission that in setting rates for any certificated capacity resource, and again, remember your definition, the commission shall consider changed revenues to the utility as well as the change of risk, if any. That decision in any certification, recertification, reexamination, modification or construction review based on evidence of record, whatever evidence is there. If the utility has complied with the provisions of the certificate, then there is a presumption that they have acted prudently. Obviously, that is a rebuttable presumption. The commission's findings are still subject to judicial review. I think some of you may have been concerned that that was not the case. Definitely, the commission's decisions are subject to judicial review. But once they're determined, and the period of filing an appeal, then you are foreclosed from going back and relitigating subjects which have been determined in a previous proceeding. Again, a disclaimer statement that the issuance of a certificate shall not preempt any local, state, federal governmental body or agency from its regulation of environmental safety matters incidental to construction.
Does the gentleman desire to yield for questions during this presentation?
No, sir. If I could complete my
gentleman has that
then
right.
I will yield. paragraph 11 on line 17, again, makes certain that this applies only to those companies whose rates are fixed by the Commission, to exclude the electric membership corporations, Oglethorpe, and the municipal electric authorities of Georgia. The effective date for this measure, of course, January 1, 1992. Now, I recognize that House Bill 280 is a technical and a complicated piece of legislation. And I have attempted today, as I attempted in subcommittee and in full committee, to take the time to go through it, maybe a little bit more thoroughly than you wish on a Tuesday afternoon, our first afternoon session. But I felt like that it's extremely important that you, on behalf of your constituents, look at each of the provisions of the substitute that was presented this morning. I think House Bill 280, firstly, is a good piece of legislation. I secondly believe that it's forward thinking. I don't want to sound like I'm not interested in 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, because I am. But I'm even more concerned about availability and affordability of energy resources in this state 10, 15, and 20 years down the road. And that is the impetus behind House Bill 280. I hope that as you've had a chance to review the information that's been placed on your desk over the last few days, you've seen a letter from Commissioner Cass Robinson. I know that you have seen editorials, both pro and con. The only concern that I have about many of the editorials is that they are written prior to looking at revisions that have been made to this piece of legislation. But I recognize that that is a part of the system. I also recognize that as long as I'm fortunate enough to chair Public Services and Utilities Subcommittee, that there are going to be some issues that are going to come before that committee that are not going to be necessarily politically popular. But I believe that on behalf of my constituents and on behalf of the state of Georgia, that I have an obligation to take those issues and to look at them closely and then to try to come to you with the best recommendation that I can make. As recently as January 24th of this year, the National Association of Regulated Utility Commissioners, these are public service commissioners from throughout the state, their national association, has put out an article dealing with approaches to prudence reviews for major utility construction of major generating facilities throughout this country. And much of what is contained in their information being recommended to utility regulators across the country is that you establish prudence review procedures and cost recovery prior to initiating a project. That's what House Bill 280 does. And let me say that again, I recognize that over the last 10 days, you have been pressured by a number of individuals in the hall concerning House Bill 280. And I regret that that takes place for each of you, because as the author, I'm the one that ought to get that. And I have been meeting with these groups continually to try to assure that we address, maybe not solve, but address the problems that have been expressed to me. And as a result of that, I have made substantial substantive changes between the original House Bill 280 and what is presented here to you today. As late as last night and again this morning, continuing to work with the Georgia Industrial Group, the China Clay Association, and the Georgia Textile Manufacturers Association. Changes have been made in this legislation so that those large users of power in this state can become comfortable with the procedure that's established in House Bill 280 and have now authorized me to state to you that they are in support of House Bill 280 as it exists with the two amendments that the gentleman from the 99th and I will offer to you. Let me close by saying that Chairman Watson, Public Services and Utilities Subcommittee of Industry, as well as the entire industry committee, have been through this presentation several times. And I appreciate very much the work that those members of that committee have done to try to work with me to make certain that what comes to you is the very best piece of legislation that we as a body can pass and send to the Senate. I believe the floor substitute that's before you today, with the amendments that will be offered, the one amendment that will be offered by Mr. Gruber and by me, is that best piece of legislation that we as members of this body can offer to the citizens and to our constituents to make certain that Georgia continues to grow and continues to develop in a reasonable and in a prudent manner. That's part of the charge that you and I have in coming down here, and I know that none of you take it lightly. Mr. Speaker, I will yield for questions. I appreciate the members' patience in allowing me to take this long in explaining this measure.
Gentlemen, yield, gentlemen of the ninth, Mr. Jackson.
Yes, sir, I'll yield.
Gentlemen, Cartersville, I first appreciate your in-depth explanation of the bill. I want to ask you, though, on page 2, I can understand under the construction, line 15 through 22, I can understand the construction language, I believe, that's going to allow you the planning and land surveying, and then the land acquisition, subsurface exploration, design work. One thing I don't understand in it is the license and our other regulatory activities, but especially contracting for construction. Are you saying that they can go forward with the design and the boring of the land and everything and even let it out for contract for construction without ever first getting a certificate from the PSC?
The reason that that language is there is to assist with determining cost. You've got to be able to estimate and certify as to cost. And the reason that that language is added is to make sure that every option is available to have the best information available to the Commission at the time the cost determination is made. And it may be that it takes to that point of actually contracting for construction. But what is even more important is, as I explained earlier, that if the company undertakes those particular activities and the Commission denies the certificate, then it is not the rate holder, the ratepayers of Georgia who pay those costs. It is the shareholders who pay that cost. The only way that it ever makes its way into the rate base is if that certificate is granted.
You, as an eminent attorney and the gentleman 99th, I'm sure have looked this very closely. I'm not going to doubt your word, but will there be any legal obligation to the ratepayers based on them allowing them to go forward with contract for construction? If the PSC does not issue that, then it would be purely on the backs of the stockholders of the company. Is that true?
Yes. Let me carry that a little further and maybe use another example. Quite often, municipal governments and county governments will sign a contract for construction but will not issue a notice to proceed until some date in the future. So you have your contract, so you know what the cost is up front for your local government. Sort of a parallel to this, you allow then, you would know what the cost is, and then at a later date, once you receive the certificate, then you grant a notice to proceed, or then the utility may proceed with the construction.
I would presume then that you would have in your contract based on approval by the Public Service Commission.
Sure.
When you let out for contract.
I would certainly think that the attorneys would make certain that there's that provision in there.
Gentlemen, you're the lady from 38.
Yes, sir, I'll yield.
Will you yield, please?
Yes.
Is it not true that you just said the cost is going to be borne by the stockholders?
As to those items contained on lines 17 through 22, in the event that there is no certificate granted by the commission, yes, ma'am, those will be borne by the stockholders.
Is it not true then on page 8, where you beginning at line 10,
mm-hmm.
covering sections, the latter portion of sections 8, 7, 8, and 9, ending in 9, the approved actual cost shall be recovered by the utility in rates along with additional sum.
That's correct, ma'am, but that's after a certificate has been granted.
Would you yield further?
Yes.
Is it not true that we do not have an idea of what the actual cost will be to our constituents? Has there been...
For what?
The rates that you're referring to here. What is it not true that we do not have an actual estimate of the cost of this type of project?
I think it's true that you nor I know what the actual cost of the next certificated capacity in this state may be, but that's for the commission to determine based on the submission of the application to it by the utility.
Is it not true that this is an indication of tremendous increases on the taxpayers?
No, ma'am, I don't know.
Jimmy, you're the lady 134th on your extreme right.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the gentleman in the well, is it not true that House Bill 280 is supposed to be aimed at beginning the process of pre-planning in an effort to have cost savings to the utility users in the state?
That is correct, along with, for the first time in the history of this state, trying to look ahead rather than look behind.
Okay. In that case, could you tell me why in the bill it is not mandated that the utility, in making its application for a certificate, would have to utilize its integrated resource plan, and that this plan would have to be approved by the PSC rather than the filing of the most recent plan, which the PSC might not have seen?
That's correct, lady from the 134th. It does not mandate that the commission approve or disapprove that integrated resource plan. That is being provided as a source of information, and over the years will provide historical perspective based on what the needs are 20 years down the road and how the company, in light of new technologies or whatever, plans to meet that need. But the commission may use that information that's contained in that plan in either granting or denying or modifying even one of the certificates. Application for a certificate.
I'm sorry. Will the gentleman yield further?
Yes.
What is the reason on page 4, at the top of the page, beginning on line 4, for actually mandating that the commission not approve? It can't make a decision. It can't approve or disapprove. What's the reason for that?
There's really no advantage to the commission approving or disapproving that. All it is being provided for informational purposes, And I'm assuming that if you put that burden on the commission, you're going to be adding an additional responsibility to the commission for them to either approve or disapprove a forecast. They, in effect, do that at the time they grant or deny or modify a certificate.
Would the gentleman yield further?
Yes.
Would it not make more sense for the commission to approve or disapprove this in, this plan rather than waiting until the most recent or the most current plan, which might even be a plan that they haven't seen, be submitted with the application, and then they're locked into, except for the first time, they're locked into 6 months to either approve a certificate, or if they fail to do so, then it's approved as a matter of law?
I think if you do so, you might very well tie the hands of the commission in using the most current information available together with any changes that may, that there may be in technologies and changes of need that may be in place. And I just do not see the need for the commission to take any affirmative action with regard to that plan other than making certain that that information is available. It's going to benefit all utilities, as a matter of fact, for, to have access to that integrated resources plan, what the needs are, what the projections are for the state for the future.
Would the gentleman yield further?
Yes.
What if it's just there, if the thrust of the bill is to have this integrated pre-planning, and if so much is riding on that, then why would, it's being filed every year, and then why would you have a plan filed with the application if at no point it really makes a difference, a significant difference is what I'm saying. It's just like going to the library, I guess.
It provides an historical perspective for the commission in the event that the utility comes in, files an application for a certificate together with their most current integrated resource plan, whether or not that plan had been previously filed. The commission has the history of those previous filings to look at to track what the utility's process was in determining need and in determining how that need would be addressed. So I think it's extremely important that we keep the integrated resources plan in there so that that information is made available. And again, it may be used by the commission in areas other than plant certification or need certification. I think it could provide some very valuable information to the commission in looking at meeting long-term needs in the state, whether it's a request by electric utility, gas, telephone customers, whatever.
One further question.
Yes.
When the Public Service Commission then makes its ruling as to a certificate under this bill, it would then, in fact, aside from having additional information to it, it would basically be making the decision in the same manner that it has made it in the past. Is that what I'm understanding? Since there's really no linkage between the integrated resource information and making a decision.
I don't know that it would be the same as in the past, because in the past they have been looking backwards instead of forwards. And I think that it's important that, again, we have that information available to them so that they can consider not only the historical perspective, but the prospective as well in terms of what the company's estimates of need are and how they intend to meet those needs.
Okay, one last question. You say, with that information then, it's a very complicated bill, and I'm trying to understand, is there any mandated utilization of the integrated resource plan by either side, either PSC or the utility making application? Or is this just a collection that's deposited and neither side really has to pay it any mind?
It is useful because if you'll look at paragraph C at the top of page 5, you will have useful life, you will have cost-benefit analysis, you will have capacity resources, consideration of capacity resources contained in that plan. And for that reason, again, I think that that requirement of the annual filing is very important, because then you can determine what planning the utility has done before coming to the commission and filing an application for a certificate.
Isn't it true, gentlemen, well, that paragraph C deals with the application? I don't know whether I'm confused. That deals with the application. I'm dealing with the integrated resource plan, which according to the bill would have to include the utility's electric demand, its energy forecast, its program for meeting requirements shown in the integrated plan, how it would do that, and an analysis of all of its present capacity resource options. And that information would be filed once a year, whether or not there was an application pending.
That's correct.
Would it not, and my question is, whether or not there is any mandated utilization of the plan at any point, how does it link up such that we know that it would result in a positive result? Or is it that the application is made based on the items in subsection C and the plan really doesn't make a difference?
Let me respond to that. The original bill had another paragraph in it that said that in the application review process, the commission shall consider the integrated resource plan together with the forecast adopted by, the Office of Planning and Budget, OPB. We took that language out because the commission felt like that language tied their hands and did not, even though it said including but not limited to, that language came out because they did not want to restrict, did not want the perception of restricting the commission to considering the integrated resource plan or the Office of Planning and Budget forecasting in determining whether or not to grant a certificate. So we just took it out entirely so the commission can consider anything they want to. Okay. That may be the best way to answer the question.
Under this bill, then, the utility could come in, it could file its application, say a year before, for that year, and then could come in toward the end of the year and file totally new information in terms of integrated resource plan with an application for increasing or decreasing capacity.
Sure.
And the old information that had been filed a year earlier would then be obsolete, because you'd have to, you'd have a more current one. And then when the PSC, the utility's application would not have to be necessarily linked to what the integrated resource plan indicates.
That's correct.
Nor would the PSC's decision have to relate to what the integrated plan shows.
That's correct. The lady is correct.
While we are between questions, gentlemen from Bartow, Mr. Oliver asked me to announce that the Penal Institution Subcommittee of the State Institutions and Property Committee will meet in the conference room in the Speaker's office immediately to consider three bills so they'll have them ready for the full committee tomorrow. Now, Chair, gentlemen, right now, gentlemen, 121st in the conference room is Penal Institution Subcommittee. Gentlemen, yield to the lady, or gentlemen, the representative from 136. I better put it that way.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, yield.
Yes, sir.
I have a series of three questions, gentlemen, from the 19th. On page 5, line 23, 24, 25, and 26, the bill discusses if the commission denies the requested certificate, it seems to mandate the commission to find an alternative means. Is that something new to the act, and is there a practical time for the commission with its staffing to search out and discover an alternative means?
It is not new to the act. It's what was in the original House Bill 280. The reason for that is, as you'll notice on line 20 and 21, that relates to the fact that if they issue an order that adopts a forecast showing that there is need, then if they deny the utilities application, they need to supply some plan for meeting that need. They may not like what the utility has submitted, and certainly they would have the discretion then to deny that application. But as a part of the process to make certain that we have available, affordable energy, they need to, if they deny it, authorize some specific alternative. And that is within that same time frame.
They would still have the option to deny the need to begin with. Is that correct?
That's right. They'd have the option to deny the need, certainly.
Gentlemen, further you.
Yes, sir.
On both page 6 and page 7, there's provisions for either the utility or the commission itself on its own motion on page 6 to re-examine any certificate. I believe that's line 15.
And that's as to future need.
And on page 7 to conduct an ongoing review.
Yes.
Would you envision that request for a re-examination or an ongoing review, when it says it could come from the commission, would you envision that also as possibly coming from the Consumer Utility Council?
If it does, in my opinion, it would come through the commission. But the Consumer Utility Council is not one and the same with the commission. So, no, it would be on the commission's recommendation or request. Not
so it would be limited to either the utility or the commission itself.
That's correct. But you'll notice that there is the provision that it may be done more often than in that time frame of 1 to 3 years, looking at line 23 on page 7. But again, it is only as to the utility or the commission. That's correct.
Gentlemen, yield to one final question.
Yes.
On the last page, page 9, beginning on line 4 and continuing for several lines, the bill discusses that the commission's decision in any certification, recertification, modification, or construction review shall be based on the evidence of record. Mm-hmm. And further on down in line 8 and 9, it says that that the decision of the, well, compliance with the provisions of a certificate results in a presumption of prudence. What does that language do, if anything, to the current standard of any judicial or other review of the commission's decision?
Does nothing.
Okay. Thank you.
Gentleman Knight, Ms. Stower.
The gentleman in oil. Will you look with me for a moment at page 4 of the bill? I have two questions. First, on line 19, do you see the word "its" where it speaks in terms of its demonstrated capacity?
Yes.
I take it that is meant to refer to that capacity, resources demonstrated capacity. And my question to you is, should that be made explicit? Do you consider it a possibility that that could be read to refer to the utility's demonstrated capacity?
No, sir. It refers to any, in my opinion, it refers back to any capacity resource.
Okay. All right, sir. Secondly, I would ask you, what about the situation in which you might have separate increases or decreases within a fairly short period of time? Let's say, for example, that in the space of a year or 2 years or 3 years, there were separately initiated increases of 10% each, but which aggregated 20%. Is this covered anywhere in the bill, or should there be provision made for the fact that those occurring within a given period of time would be taken as a single increase?
The way the language is drawn, as you look at permanent increases or decreases, I think definitely if there are changes that are made that this year's 10%, next year's 10%, next year's 10%, then I think the commission certainly is going to interpret that as being an increase or decrease, as the case may be, in the demonstrated capacity, and as a result of that could require that the utility file the application.
you don't think...
And disallow, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing, is that the commission may disallow those increases from the rate base.
You don't think any clarity would be added by an additional sentence that increases or decreases initiated within a given period of time, whatever that time might be, would be aggregated and taken as a single increase or decrease?
No, sir. I think it goes without saying that again, the commission will make the determination of whether or not that utility is increasing or decreasing. The reason that language is as important as it is where it is because of the shutdown of an existing facility. You want to make certain that that's covered, and that's the reason why the language is drawn that way in paragraph B.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentleman yield, gentleman 28, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, sir, I'll yield.
I have three questions of information, Mr. Pettit. The first at the bottom of line 7 and top of line 8. Is it current practice that when a filing occurs that unless the PSC acts within the specified period of time that the request automatically... I can't tell from this.
That
there's no lines through this because a lot
that
of times we know when the law is being changed based on that.
Yes, sir, gentlemen.
Second
tracks,
question
that
relates
that
to...
existing law.
Okay. Second question relates to the recoverability of expenditures that are not approved by the PSC. And I guess the question I have is that the wording on paragraph D, which says, beginning line 12, that the utility may recover through rates over a reasonable period of time that partially completed portion of the facility. And that occurs even if the commission disapproves. It seems to be saying that they can recover even though the commission disapproves based on increasing the rates. Is that what this bill does?
No, so that's in the event of a cancellation. If you look on line 8, on page 8, line 8, where the utility cancels construction as a result of that disapproval by the commission, only then do they recover through rates.
Okay, but this is if they would cancel it for a purpose other than the fact that the commission disapproved. In other words, you're saying if the commission approves something and then for some reason utility finds that the project is not feasible and they cancel it?
No, so that's only as to the revisions and then the utility cancellation as a result of those proposed revisions.
Okay. And I guess the third question I have again relates to the recoverability provision down in beginning line 20 about the cost of purchase. It again seems to me to read as though there is some sharing of these costs between the stockholders and the customers in terms of the cost of these utilities. And I thought we were saying that this is one of the things that the users would never have to do. In other words, again, the recoverability provision. Maybe I'm misreading, and that's why I was asking for clarification.
I think the gentleman may be missing that it is certificated power purchase. It must have been certificated by the commission in order for there to be any recoverability at all. If it was not certificated by the commission, then you would not have any recovery.
So you're saying that it would be possible for the utility to make expenditures to use its capital and then go and perhaps have that plan that they'd already started implement?
No,
well, then
sir.
What would be the situation under which certificated power purchase would then be later disapproved?
I didn't hear the last part of your question. Under what provisions, what?
Would the approval of certificated power purchases be disapproved by the commission? In other words, if the utility started building something that received prior approval...
This is not building. This has nothing to do with construction. This is buying off system long term, where the utility enters into a contract to buy from Florida Light and Power over a long term electric energy for Georgia.
Okay, well that...
It has nothing to do with construction.
Okay.
Gentlemen, yield to the gentleman 57, Mr. Offen.
Yes, I yield.
To the gentleman of the well, on page 8, the bottom of page 8, paragraph 9, if I read that correctly, then the commission, in fact, could set the equivalent of a higher rate of return for demand-side capacity options than supply-side, thereby encouraging the utility to invest more in conservation than in supply-side. Is that correct?
That is correct. Totally in the discretion of the commission.
Further question. Therefore, isn't that the reason why the integrated resource plan is necessary, so that when the utility and the commissioners are trying to decide which of the two options it has, it in fact, through rate-making procedures, can encourage one capacity option above the other?
That is correct. Gentleman is.
Further question. Isn't it true that in states like Wisconsin, where this kind of legislation is passed and is in operating, that in fact for the past 3 years those utilities have actually seen rate decreases because they have chosen and have been encouraged to go with demand side options versus building future power plants?
Yes, and of course you would be more familiar with that than probably any member of this body because of some of your engineering experience and background in dealing with conservation measures.
Gentlemen, you're the lady from the 37th on your right.
I'll yield.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes,
to the gentleman in the well. Is it not true that I spoke with you regarding a concern of mine in terms of the time limit of response for the PSA?
That is correct.
And that isn't it also further true that you were kind and tried to incorporate that in the bill?
I appreciate you letting me answer the question about whether or not I'm kind.
But isn't it also true to the gentleman of the well that your incorporation of my concern did not truly meet what my concern was?
No, ma'am, and I wanted to make certain that I got to you in advance and told you that as a result of the question you raised about the time of the filing of the first application, that the commission ought to have adequate time in which to make that decision. I had previously, at the request of the commission, put in the Commissioner Robinson, let me clarify, had put in the provision for 270 days, and after looking at your concern, I felt like there would be no harm in adding an additional 30 days to that process.
Isn't it also true, though, that my concern was not only about time, but that I was concerned about an avenue to give the PSC the opportunity to have some time if there were an emergency, particularly in view of the fact that I have been told that their staff is going to be cut by 16% or 17%. And so my concern was that something would be there to give them that opportunity if that emergency occurred without going over this date and it becoming law. And that still does concern me.
As I recall your amendment, what it did was is it left the existing language at 270 but said if some emergency occurs, the commission may take up to 315 days in order to make a decision with regard to it. And I understand what that concern is. Let me point out, too, that the cuts that you're talking about with regard to the PSC and certainly other agencies of state government as well, that is for the FY92 year beginning January 1, 1991, expiring June 30th, 1992. And this measure does not even take effect until January 31, 1992. And even then, all you would have is the first integrated resource plan requirement filed, although certainly they may request an application during that first 6 months of the year, or 5 months until that funding period elapses.
Just, would you yield one more time?
Yes.
To the gentleman in the well, what would happen at this point in terms of the substitute bill if the PSC could not answer within the 300 days?
Just as the law is now, then the application is granted by operation of law. Although I'm not certain that the lady is aware, even though it is not specifically set out in this bill nor anywhere else in the code, as I recall, in the past, the commission and the utility have agreed to extend the six-month period, the 180 days. It's been done by both parties. And in the event, I'm assuming that in the event they decided to do that again, it could certainly be done.
Gentlemen, 100 seconds.
Let me respond just a little bit further, Mr. Speaker. And certainly they could deny the certificate. They can summarily deny the certificate.
But if they deny the certificate, is it not true, though, that they have to offer an alternative plan?
No, sir. No, excuse me. No, ma'am. Not unless they have found a need to exist. If they have found an order of need, yes.
Okay, now, the gentleman, yield gentleman 102nd, Mr. Lucas.
Yes, sir.
Gentleman and well. First, let me ask you. Explain to me what the integrated resource plan is. I see it's supposed to be a forecast for 20 years, but I mean, what is it supposed to entail?
If the gentleman will look, beginning on line 26 of page 3, the integrated resource plan is the utilities program for meeting requirements shown in the utilities forecast in an economical and reliable manner, has the analysis of the capacity resources, both demand side and supply side, sets forth what the utilities' assumptions and conclusions are with respect to those options, continues over to the top of page 4 that deals with what the commission does at the time they receive that. It is the forecasting tool that the utility has that it uses to determine what's going to be needed 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years down the road.
Gentlemen, you're further.
Yes.
What is the difference in what is being proposed here and what the utilities have to provide the PSC right now?
They don't have to provide them anything right now.
If they build a plant, don't they have to provide them something?
They have to go over there and ask for funding. They have to go over there and obtain financing, get an approval for financing. That's all they got to do.
An approval for financing from the ratepayers to build a plant?
No, approved bond financing.
Let me ask the gentleman this.
For the construction cost.
Let me ask the gentleman this. In order to get approval for financing or to sell bonds to build a plant, don't they have to show the Public Service Commission something where they need the demand, they need to build a plant for the power to service a particular area?
They're not required to.
They're not required to. And so what you're, is it not true then what you're telling us is that they've been building plants and didn't have to build one, and that was no way that the Public Service Commission could stop them?
They could by denying the financing, but the only incentive that the company had to earn a rate of return was to continue building. And that's part of the purpose of this bill, is to make sure that there's some incentives there to do things other than construct power plants in this state.
Let me ask you another question, sir. In that case then, is there any way, anything in this bill that would prohibit the utility from making a second filing right after the first filing? You know, after the first filing, isn't it true, after the first filing, they must answer within 300 days, but also have a hearing the first 30 days within the filing?
No, the hearing's not during the first 30 days. The hearing is in not less than 30, nor more than.
Not less than 30 days when you make the application, then?
That's correct.
Now, if one makes the... Is it not true that if one makes the application or the filing?
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Are you asking me whether or not the utility can pancake or stack its application?
That is absolutely right. Would say within that 30 days or 45 days, and then you be at the same time of having to respond within 180 days after the first filing, which you were only supposed to respond in the first 300 days.
They could certainly stack their filings. There would be nothing to prohibit that except the fact that the commission's going to establish the fee each time they do that. And by all estimates, that fee is going to be $200,000, $300,000 to $500,000. We're not talking about an $80 filing fee to go to Fulton Superior Court. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in the amount of the fee. And by the way, that fee, of course, is going to be paid by the shareholders unless the certificate's granted. So you're putting the shareholders at risk and saying that the company's going to stack filings?
Well, I'm asking, gentlemen, you know, they make millions. They don't make $100,000. They make millions over there. The next question I would like to ask you, what will prevent, say, if you have a power plant and it's put in the rate base, and then you sell power offline to another system, do you have in here where then the PSC can make them rebate that back to the consumers who are paying for it?
They can't do it. This deal is for retail sales only. You're talking about wholesale off system, not at all included in this measure. If they do that, they're totally at risk.
Well, let me ask you this question. Didn't they just do that about a couple of months ago and sold some power to Florida Power, and it was built by the ratepayers in Georgia?
It's never been put in the rate base in Georgia. They did sell Unit 4 plant share to Florida. They sold not only the power, but the bricks and mortar as well. No longer owned by the Southern Systems, no longer owned by Georgia Power. I'm assuming that has actually been finalized. At least that was the plan.
I think it was a last question.
Poor decision.
If the PSC comes up with a way to decrease the demand for the use of power, in other words, new innovative ideas, energy conservation ideas, then because you have reduced what the demand is, therefore also reducing what your cost is to produce the energy, will the PSC in this bill, will it make sure that they won't be able to go back and recoup that from the ratepayers, even though they reduced their cost to produce the power?
Let me tell you, that is a good point, because for the first time we've got in the law, in this, or would have in the law, assuming you'll pass this, the taking into consideration the risk as well as the loss of income, changed income. If you'll remember, at the end of the bill, you've got changed revenues. So for the first time, it's written into the law that the commission shall consider that in setting rates.
Well, I have no problem with that. What I'm asking is, even in considering, I want to make sure that if you reduce the demand by conservation measures, then you also have reduced your cost as far as producing the energy. If you look on the other side of it, can the utility
that you reduce rates?
Well, not all the time. Can they put in the rate base that what they might have spent to reduce that demand? Put in the rate base.
They can put in, if the gentleman will look on line 26, page 8, they can put in the approved or actual cost, whichever is less.
So what you're saying is that, what you're actually saying is that the stockholders themselves really don't put up anything as far as at risk when it comes to the demand on the utility.
No, sir. They are continuing to be at risk.
Gentlemen, one further question. If you are in business, and we do some things to reduce our costs, we make money. So I'm asking the same thing about the utility. If they do some things, which they spend their own money as stockholders to reduce the cost, then why should it be put into the rate base for them to recover, which basically means that they have cost you more money?
The only way to do that, these are what are called those things that just sort of loom out there. You can't really put your hand on it, but it's instead of building a plant, you have something that you're able to use to reduce the power need. So instead of the additional environmental concerns by building additional capacity, you allow the utility to have an incentive to put into place the demand side option of some sort.
Gentlemen, yield the gentleman 21st. Mr. Wilder.
Gentlemen, yield.
That's
a real friendly question and an observation. I think it would, isn't it true that it would be a lot easier for some members of this body to vote for this bill if we felt comfortable that when we went home and we had to explain it, we had a synopsis? So wouldn't it be a nice idea if somebody could help provide us a synopsis if this bill does pass, so we can try to help explain it at home?
If I thought my seatmate could read it, I'd be happy to provide one.
Isn't that true? Now, to get down to the friendly questions, on On page 2, where it talks about land acquisition costs on line 18, what kind of land, how many acres you talk about buying ballpark? 50, 100, 200?
Depends on what you're going to build. You could easily be acquiring 1,000, 1,500 acres of land.
Would it be a prudent investment for the utility company, rather than buying the land, to put an option to buy the land and thereby not spend the money in the event that they did not receive approval?
Sure, they could do that.
Is there anything to prohibit them from doing that in this law?
No, sir.
Okay. But there's no assumption that it would be done that way either, is there?
No, that's going to be a decision that's got to be made. And again, the shareholders are at risk if they whether they go with an option or whether they go with a purchase.
Okay.
The at-risk provision remains there until a certificate, an application for a certificate is filed and a certificate is granted.
Okay. And in the event that the certificate is not granted, then some of these costs would be reimbursable to the ratepayers?
Try that one more time.
In the event that the Public Service Commission said no, then some of these expenses that have already been incurred, what would happen to them?
Borne by the stockholders.
Okay, okay. On page 3, line 25, where it talks about the 20-year period, my first question would be, approximately how long does it take to build a plant, an average, whatever average is?
Depends on the type of plant that you're building, but you're looking at minimum of anywhere of probably 3 years to a maximum of 12, 13, 14 years in the event you don't run into construction delays, cost overruns, and problems. Otherwise, it can be 20 years.
Yeah. Okay, well, the reason I ask the question is because it seems to me that we're asking somebody to forecast 20 years out into the future. I don't think there's anybody in this room that can do that for their own business, and I kind of have a hard time asking somebody else's business to do that as well. On page 4, on line 23, where it talks about no certificate should be required if the increase or decrease is caused by rule, reg, or law mandated by some local state or government, federal government body or agency. What's the likelihood of that happening?
Very likely. You know yourself how much occasionally the federal government gets involved in some of your business, and they come in and tell you you got to do something. You don't have any choice. Like some of what we pass through here because we're told that the feds have mandated it on us.
Oh, you're talking about those emission inspection things then?
Yeah, you got possibly one example.
And the last question would be on page 5, line 26. The utility shall only be obligated to serve the requirements contained in the forecast and certified by the commission. What would happen if the utility company's forecast said there was need for 100 units of whatever? Let's just use 100 as an example. And the Public Service Commission comes back and says, well, there's really only a demand for 10. Could the commission require the utility company to meet that demand of 10 and absorb those costs?
And absorb the cost?
Yeah, let's say that the utility companies plan on building a plant to service a requirement for 100 units. And the commission comes back and says, hey, there's only demand for 10 units.
That's why the language is there that if they deny the certificate, then they provide the alternative. And the obligation to serve continues.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen, yield. Gentlemen, 88, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to yield the floor because I know
this is
there's
your last question.
All right, I'll take one last question.
I got it. With the gentleman here, I got a couple of questions. I want you to be frank and honest with me before you yield the floor. Would you mind? But is it not true that on page 7, beginning at line 3, section 46.38-7, deal with the construction of electric plant? Does that tile section deal with the construction of electric plant?
It does.
Okay. Do you yield further?
Yes.
then it is further not true that Section D on page 8 deal with the cancellation or disapproval of part of the revision for construction of a plant.
Where are you?
I'm on page 8 now, section D of the same tile section.
Thank you.
I'm starting at line 7 through line 18.
That also deals with construction.
Okay. Well, it's further not true than in answer to the question from the gentleman from the 28th, then the disapproval or the cancellation of a construction of a plant can be put in a public utility consumer's rate base. If they do not build a plant, they stop construction, then they can put in all the costs up to the point they cancel the construction into the rate base. Is that not true?
That's correct. If the commission disapproves of all or a part of the proposed revisions, and as a result of that, the utility cancels, then the actual cost of the actual investment in that partially completed portion does in fact go into the rate base.
Thank you, sir. And I know your meter is still running. You
but
may yield the floor.
That was approved, though, before it was spent. It was approved by the commission in the certification process before it was spent. Mr. Speaker, I'm going to yield the floor, and I know there are several other speakers with regard to this bill. Let me say that I appreciate your consideration, House Bill 284 substitute, and hope that ask that you give it due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Chair and I, gentleman 46, Mr. Teeper.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House, I appear before you today after spending the last 12 years of my life working on the issue of energy and utility regulation. I want to applaud the efforts of the subcommittee chairman and the chairman of the full committee for doing an excellent job of crafting together a piece of legislation that is complex in scope. It's also a revolutionary change in the way we regulate utility rates in this state. For years, when I used to go down to the Public Service Commission and intervene in rate cases, the basic operating procedure was the company would risk its investment in a plant by within the confines of their boardroom deciding whether or not to spend their own money on a project. 5 years down the line, after the plant was finished, up and running, they would appear before the commission and ask that they recover their investment plus a rate of return. That's the traditional way of making rates in Georgia. It impacts all of us, every one of us, not just those people who have served as retail customers, but it impacts the whole economy of the state of Georgia and its ability to attract business. We're changing all that now.
I didn't hope for that.
Georgia Power is a privately held corporation. My understanding is all of its common stock is owned by the Southern Company. We passed a law many years ago which granted them an exclusive territory, a monopoly, for retail service. We have to guarantee a healthy utility, like I said before, in order to make sure that we have electricity. I come today to the well to let you know that half of this bill is very, very good. Georgia Power, the Public Service Commission, is being asked to look at what's called demand-side options, the promotion of conservation and energy efficiency to meet our expected needs for the future. The second half of the bill asks that the Public Service Commission pre-approve the plans. This is a dramatic change. At the point in time that the Public Service Commission pre-approves the plans, basically the risk has shifted. The company at that point is assured of collecting their investment and a return on their investment. Even if a year later evidence comes before the commission and they cancel the permit. Now that's not evil. I'm not up here to say anybody's doing evil. I'm telling you we're having a philosophical change of the way we do business in this state, and it can have dramatic impacts upon the rates that we pay. Each and every one of us have to determine in our own minds if we're willing to support the Public Service Commission being in a position of pre-approving plans that will mandate that whatever plans they support will go into the rate base, which will then have an effect on the bills we pay. After spending 6 years intervening, I unfortunately do not believe that it's in the capability or the ability of the commission to properly make that determination. I wish I had more faith in their ability to do so. I also want to mention to you that there possibly could be, I guess, what we call a pig in the poke here. The company doesn't plan to build any large plants anytime soon, but they do have to build some what they call peaking plants. Those are the plants that go on for just a couple of days or maybe a couple hours in the summer. They sometimes have to make a $100, $200 million investment for a plant that runs for a couple hours. I would contend that they do not have to build these plants. They don't have to purchase these plants. I believe they can capture that capacity by encouraging what's called peak shaving, which many textile facilities have rates in which they have what's called interruptible service, where at the peak day in the heat of the summer, they shut down for an hour or two. They make some money on being in the interruptible service category. That helps all of us and the company, because the company doesn't have to spend a couple hundred million dollars for a plant that runs 1 hour all year long. In a nutshell, what I'm asking you to do today is that we look at one half of this bill, the part that promotes demand-side planning. But I believe we have to reject what's called pre-plant certification, because we cannot put an underfunded, understaffed Public Service Commission into the boardroom of Georgia Power without the ability to make a reasoned and rational decision that once is made will have an impact on the rates you pay. I want to applaud one more time the subcommittee chairman and the chairman and also the gentleman from Macon for helping this bill. I think when it originally came out of subcommittee, when it originally came out of committee, it had a few problems in it, and we were trying to address those problems one by one. We fixed a paragraph here, we dotted an I there and crossed a T there. But the problem is not dotted I's. The problem is the philosophical concept that we're going to change the whole way we approve expenses by the company and the eventual rate-making ability of the Public Service Commission. I don't think it's in our, as the state of Georgia, and individually as members representing our districts, to support a bill that can have, in my opinion, a devastating impact upon the economy and the quality of life in this state. Mr. Speaker, I'll yield for any questions.
Gentleman yield to gentleman for 50th, Mr. Redding.
Gentleman yield. I'm trying to get an understanding of your logic toward the second portion of the bill. If my notes are correct, you mentioned the fact that in your six-year experience with the Public Service Commission, that you had some doubts about their ability to function in the capacity that's so defined in the contents of this bill in that portion that you were speaking of. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You went further to say that you had problems with the PSEs because of their lack of funding and small staff in being able to properly deal with the pre-certification portions of this bill. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
So what I'm trying to get at is your problem with this particular legislative proposition, or is it with the fact that the limitations of the Public Service Commission? I'm just trying to get some kind of, because based on your knowledge of this subject, I'm just trying to get some knowledge myself. Is your problem with this particular bill, that portion that you spoke of, or do you have problems with the Public Service Commission under this particular bill being able to properly assume their responsibility?